Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today we have Chris Gibson from the UK. He is the Executive Director of FIRST, which is Forum for Incident Response and Security Teams. So Chris, welcome. Thanks for joining today from all the way across the pond.
Thank you very much. It's a real honor to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so we're, what, plus eight there, plus seven?
It's five, just 10 past five in the afternoon here.
Okay, we're at 10 o'clock in the morning here, so we get, exactly. So Chris, first, give us a little bit about what that is, a little bit about your mission. Just a little bit though, we'll get into the details later.
Of course. So FIRST is genuinely, the clue is in the name. It's the Forum of Incident Response and Security Teams. It's an inclusive community, a global community of incident responders and security experts, where we try and build trust, we try and build a common understanding, we try and help each other with best practices. We get together some 20, 30 times a year at various events, and we try and make the world from incident response a better place by educating people and raising the highlight of it.
Okay, so now a little bit about you. You said, you know, we'll get about FIRST, but how did you get into where you're at? What's your background?
Gosh, right. Well, my background is sort of interesting, in a very strange way. I was trained as a land surveyor. My first 4 years of my working life, I spent bouncing around the desert in Saudi Arabia looking for oil. This was about the time that the first PCs came out, in the mid-80s. We had them on the crew that I worked for. I liked them. I felt like I could understand them, so to speak. And I wanted to move out of that land surveying world into computer technology. This again, late 80s. I went to work for a bank. I worked there for a few years. I transferred to a bigger global bank, and ended up in their incident security team. In fact, Steve Katz, one of the very first CISOs in the world, he was my boss's boss. It was a truly awesome experience where we tried to build that very early, how do we make the world secure? How do we do this properly? Since then, I moved into incident response. I moved into forensics. That's my sort of commercial grant. That's what I do for my day job. But for a number of years, I was a volunteer with FIRST, Citigroup, the bank I worked for, or was a member of FIRST. I was their rep into the organization. I was on the board of FIRST for some 10 years. Just love what they do. It's a really interesting space. It's all about building networks, trust, and community. I feel very lucky. I was in the right place at the right time, and I just hit the wave as it went through, and have enjoyed every minute of it. But it's a, you know, you're doing good stuff type thing. It's trying to make the world a better place, being sort of vaguely vocational.
So you've been with FIRST a while. But FIRST has a big history. You were telling me before the show, been around since how long? When did it get founded?
Early 90s. So if you look at incident response, the very first big worm was the Morris worm, which is where sort of 10% of the internet got taken down by a worm that was kicked off by a research student to sort of evaluate stuff, and it spun out of control slightly. That was when CertCC was formed, which is sort of a real nascent part of the internet security community in the US. Fast forward a year, there was a second worm. This went around the world again, and people realized that although there were people who touched on security in this internet of, you know, very early internet, there weren't really any organization. There was no structure. There was no proper organization. People knew people, so they called their friends. That was that kind of relationship. And they thought, you know what? We need to sort of get together. We need to talk about this. We need to collaborate. We need to work on how to do this better, and that's genuinely how FIRST was formed. At the time, it was about 15 teams. We've grown significantly since then. 2014, when I stepped away, when I changed some of my jobs, we had 250 teams. In the last 5 years, we've literally doubled. We're now at 506 teams, I believe. We're in 94 countries around the world. You have everything from your Microsofts and Oracles and Palo Altos and Ciscos through to Oxford University CERT and, you know, UK's or the CERT, the National Cybersecurity Centre in the UK. So we have this huge range of people in our membership, all joined as teams, and they bring different perspectives on everything that we do. So universities typically have a really interesting life because they have lots of students who do strange things. Banks can't afford to be hacked, so they have a very different take on how the internet security incident should be run. But we bring all those people together at a number of events. We had one this year in Edinburgh, or last year in Edinburgh. 1,100 people turned up for a week to talk about this. Where we bring them together, we learn, we collaborate, we coordinate, we build trust. When I've got a problem the other side of the world, I know I now can call someone on the other side of the world.
Okay.
94 countries. We've still got another 94 to go somewhat about that. But, you know, that's the mission, is to build that out and build that out.
All right, we're going to take a break, hear from our sponsors. Be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. Today, talking with Chris Gibson from FIRST in the UK. And Chris, we were going, you know what, first in the detailed what you've done, how long you've been around. First question I had while you were talking is, how are you part of any government? Are you part of the UK, sponsored, funded by? What's the relationship there with standardization or even, you know, governments?
So no, we're not part of any government. We are what we call pretty a non-government organization. We are legally headquartered out of the US, mainly because the original founding members were US-based. And once the organization got to the point where it needed to rent hotels and things for organization, you know, for meetings, we needed a structure to do that. So it was founded in the US. That's purely the only reason. Our money comes from either membership, there's an annual dues to join, and the sponsorship and or registration from the events we run. So again, you know, the Edinburgh event, for instance, 1,100 people turn up, they pay to come. Mm-hmm. There's a registration fee. We get sponsorship from some significant organizations who sponsor those. As a non-profit, you know, we don't call that profit, we call that surplus, and we take that money and we reinvest that straight back into the community.
Okay.
So while we have our organization and we do the training, we also have done a lot of training for national capacity building, say for incident response teams. Small countries in the Pacific who want to build a national CERT, you know, we'll help them with that. We have special interest groups which we fund. So we've just literally released one where we're talking about the ethics of being an incident response team. Really, really important to us about what sort of values people should have as that, how they should work, how that should work. We want that to be an industry-wide thing. That is not specifically a FIRST piece. So we fund a website, we fund a SIG, we run their web conferences, we provide support. We use the money, the surplus we gain out of our daily work, so to speak, and push that back into the community, absolutely to fulfill the sort of the four missions or the four pillars of things we do.
Interesting. And so as far as what does a member get for their membership, you know, what kind of features do you offer? What would I get if I signed up as a member? Because I'm not just curious.
Right. So again, we're back to that. We're literally a forum. We're a place where people come together. So as a member, there are mailing lists you can get access to. There are information sharing platforms that we run. Which we're working on to boost up, but there are some of those that we run that allow people to share information, to learn from each other. There's a certain kudos of being a member of FIRST, I think. You know, the fact that a team is a FIRST member is really quite important to a lot of people. But it's really it's $2,000 a year. It's for someone like Microsoft or Oracles or whoever. You know, it's not a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives them access to all these other viewpoints on the problems that we face. So yeah. They're not just looking at it from their own, you know, way of thinking. They're also looking at what would a university think about this, or what would a nation state think about this, or what would a third world country think about this, and so on. So it gives them that ability to tap into that network.
Yeah, I hear so many organizations in cybersecurity, let's get us an event together. let's get a forum, let's start talking. They put whatever out there and crickets, you know. Because they have nothing really to offer. It's like the chicken and the egg. Until you have content, it's not worth paying for. But until you get users built up, you don't get content. So
it's a real challenge. And to be fair, you know, we've all sat there. There are two, you know, I would quite happily argue there are too many people doing this.
Yes.
You know, people want to do it. I'm all for doing it. But try and do it joined up. Try and think about how you're doing it. You know, when I was on the board of FIRST back in 2014, if we hit sort of 500 people at a conference, we thought we were doing really well. We had 1,100 people turn up in Edinburgh. You know, I think there's an understanding that's rippling through the world that says actually you can't defend your way out of this problem. As an organization, you know, the old days, you spent money on firewalls, you spent money on defenses. People are realizing that, yeah, you can do that, but that's not the be all and end all. And you are going to have to expect to have an event that you will need to manage. Because if you do that, then you'll be more prepared than, you know, if you focus on defending and when it goes wrong, you haven't put any thought into how you're going to do that. So that reaction, that incident response, that incident management, you know, we can all name companies and people who've done this really quite badly. Mm-hmm. Through the communications they put out or through the drip of the bad news rather than managing it, through the Twitter. I mean, these days, the days when you had a bit of time to work out what your message was going to be have long gone. You know, Twitter, social media is going to be blitzing you if you've been hacked. You know, you'll probably learn about it through that rather than through any other means. And you need to be very quick at responding to that. And that's a really different thing from what most big organizations' communications, you know, functions are. They're corporate comms. You know, they look at I's and cross T's and want it to be perfect. You can't be doing that. So having a plan, having exercised it, having thought about it, so when you have an incident, you can, you know, your senior management will walk in and just run with it. Really, really powerful. And I think that's where we're also focusing. People have said, actually, you know, we need a plan. These are the guys who can help us build that plan because they've been doing this for years. And that's what we focus on.
And bringing them together. So you don't have a service you sell, professional staffed, technology that you have, frameworks.
I am the one and only full-time employee at FIRST. It's a wholly volunteer-run organization. We pay for services, so there's an accountant, there's a website, stuff like that. But what we do, and one of the four missions that we have, is this sort of global language where we try and build standards.
Mm-hmm.
So the CVSS standard, Common Vulnerability Scoring System, that's ours. We own that standard. We have a working group that works to constantly improve it. They've just released version 3.1. I think we'll be releasing version 4 in a year or so, which will be a big change. But, you know, we're trying to build standards so people can then start automating and talking in that common language.
Mm-hmm.
CVSS was born because back in the day, you know, Microsoft would release a patch and say, it's super critical. Well, what does that mean? You know, and Oracle and all these other people, and there was no common understanding of what that really meant. And to be fair, it depends on how you're using the product and so on. That's where CVSS comes in. So it was developed by, I think, MITRE in the US or one of the US government organizations, but we took it on as a neutral, non-profit global organization. We run a CISA framework standard. So if you're building a CISA, we have a framework that says these are the sort of things you can do, these are the services you could offer. You know, you don't have to do them all, and I would strongly suggest you don't do them all, but these are the things you can offer, and this is how you underpin those so you can build them consistently and build them well. Rather than, you know, a guy walks past management's desk, manager says, you're the CISA guy, go build one, and the guy's like, I have no idea what I've got to do here. You know, what do I need? How do I do that? Who do I talk to? Well, we can help in all of those pieces. You know, we can help you build it. We can help you learn from other people. We can introduce you. We can build that network. That's really, really important because we need to spin these things up much more quickly than we used to.
Yeah, you and I are in the same space. How do we build awareness? How do we link everything together? And, you know, it has to start somewhere. And we've done pretty well as a podcast. We probably have the biggest following of any that I'm aware of. And sometimes we kind of look at, we probably hit about, you know, 30 to 50,000 people a month that are engaged with this. And our worldwide is growing, which is why we're reaching out now to people like yourself, trying to get different perspectives from different parts of the globe. We actually have a big following in the UK, about 10% of our listener base is over there.
Wow, that's very sweet.
So if you're in the UK and you're listening, thanks for joining somebody in your neck of the woods. And we definitely would like some more people to bring in from UK. I know Brexit has some changes coming down the road, and We're going to take a break here from our sponsors, but I want to hear from you about what you think about what's going on over there. Be right back.
Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information.
Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. Today, talking to Chris Gibson from the UK, the executive director of FIRST, the Forum for Incident Response and Security Teams. Now, we before the break, we mentioned that there's a big governmental change going on over there, right, with Brexit. What's your spin on what you see and how it affects security?
So I live in hope. So this is where we get, you know, as a non-government organization, we try not to get involved in politics. Mm-hmm. There are times we have no choice. There are, you know, certain sanctions that have gone around that have caused us those issues. Up till now, though, the Brexit debate really hasn't affected us. This is sort of where one of my challenges is. You know, we are very much an organization that networks, brings people together. The fact that I'm in the UK is frankly immaterial. When my job was advertised, it could have been anywhere in the planet. I just happen to be in the UK, and I'm very grateful that I got the job. So I don't think it's going to cause a lot of problems. What does cause the problems are some of the sort of the regulations that we're seeing coming out of various governments around the world that says, you know, you can't talk to these people, you can't talk to these people. You know, there are very, you know, the OFAC sanctions, the BIS sanctions, there are other sanctions around the world that interfere with what we do, and I don't believe by design. I think, you know, they're aimed at a very specific reason, and, you know, perfectly justifiable reason. But the nuance of the language is such that it also impacts the information sharing that we do when we are trying to help each other, you know, manage incidents and resolve incidents. You know, there are two things that we do that realistic, or the two things we resigned on are trust and a common goal. Mm-hmm. First, teams typically have a common goal. They want to make the internet better. They want to make it safer. They want to help their constituents. And they want to help each other do that. And to do that, they need to trust each other. And we run very much at that sort of personal team, but personal level. So a Brexit is not going to impact us. Some of the sanctions that have been pushed through, say, to some of the big Chinese companies, because of the things they prohibit, have caused us to have to take a good hard look at that. And to be fair, I'm spending a lot of money on sanctions lawyers that I'd rather not be spending because of those sanctions. That's why one of the pillars or one of the missions that we push quite heavily over the last few years is more on the policy and governance debate. For many, many years, first mm-hmm. types were the guys down in the basement looking at packet captures and analyzing incidents. And things were going on at a policy level or a government level that we really weren't aware of and we didn't pay attention to. Yet those things directly affect how we can do our job. So we're very keen now to push that policy and governance education, we call it, not training, to policymakers and governance folks to say, look, this is what we do, this is why we do it, this is how we do it. Think that stuff. So when you write sanctions rules or information sharing restrictions or whatever, it'd be great if you sort of thought about us and added us into that bucket of, but these people can carry on doing stuff because they're doing good work. That's a real difficult thing. You know, that's going to take a lot of time to change. You know, moving governments is like moving the Titanic with a rowing boat. But that's where the space we're trying to get into. And we're getting some traction on that. We're seeing more people asking us about that. It's becoming more of a focus of people. But at the end of the day, you know, if I have a problem in certain countries, I'm you know, sort of prohibited from speaking to them through various sanctions regimes. That doesn't help and can't help what we're trying to do, which is to basically make the internet a safer place.
Doesn't a non-governing body organization, or non-government organization shelter that and enable you to really have conversations across the board, or is it still subject to embargoed countries from certain areas?
So yes and no. A perfect example, we have had over the years, we have had teams from Iran want to come to our conference. We're a very open conference. Anybody can attend. Well, anybody, you know, other than this kind of problem, they're not closed conferences. If you pay your money, you can turn up. So when we've had those teams, we'd love them to come, but the challenge is that we then have to accept money from them to register, and that's, you know, can cause a sanctions problem. We're a US organization, so we have to follow the law. I can't break the law, even though I'm an NGO. And then the other challenge is that some of our members, you know, are obviously, I think 20% odd of our members are US based. They can't, you know, do something that's going to be illegal because they are US companies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a challenge there of, you know, do they step back from what we're doing? Do we try and restrict it? Do we subdivide our membership into this and that, which feels very wrong and frankly probably causes more problems anyway. So it's not just us, that is our membership has the same challenge. They might want to share information with someone in the country, but be prohibited. And if we facilitate it, you know, it just all becomes very, very painful.
So you might gain one organization from Iran, but lose 20 from a country that can't.
Very possibly.
Look at the political ramifications of it.
Yeah, it's a horrible choice because, you know, we want the folks from Iran, but I can't afford to lose the you know, Microsofts and the Oracles and whoever's in the US, because that would not, you know, that's not a balance that works well for us. So that's where we'd always like to be like law enforcement and some of the medical things, where there's sort of an exemption built into these things and say they can carry on doing stuff because it's for a good purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, if we could get ourselves into that space in policymakers in thoughts, that would be wonderful. But, you know, that's going to take some time.
And that's policy in the United States that you're looking to change.
To be fair, there are sanctions. You know, EU has sanctions. The UK has. Everybody has sanctions. So it's not just the US problem. You know, I use those as the examples that everybody knows about, but it's definitely not just them.
Huh. And so working international, you have to look at whose toes am I stepping on and what's the lesser of evils almost.
To a degree, yes. Yeah. And that's not a choice. That's a choice I feel very uncomfortable making. And luckily, I have a board, so it's not just me making that choice. But, you know, to a degree, we have to make those calls.
So what's your board look like? How many people are on that?
We have a 10-person board. They're elected. Each one's elected for a 2-year period, so 5 every year. So we have five people are elected every middle of the year, June or so. Mm-hmm. We have folks from Japan. We have folks from Europe, folks from Spain, Germany, Switzerland, US, I'm trying to think where some of the others are from. We to be fair, anybody within FIRST can stand for election, but it's a very diverse board from around the world.
Does it have to be diverse by bylaws or policy, or is it just whoever gets nominated and elected?
It is very much who gets nominated and elected, and to do that, you know, you're elected by the membership, so you need to be visible within the community and be doing good stuff. That's what gets you elected, being good people. Mm-hmm. We are pushing quite heavily on a sort of more diverse, certainly, you know, getting more women on board, both within the organization and that. So we, in fact, in Edinburgh, set up a new, what we call a BOF, a Birds of a Feather session. It's where it's just a small informal group that tries to affect change in many ways. It could be within the organization, it could be externally, called the WOF BOF, the Women of FIRST Birds of a Feather session. Mm-hmm. So we are very, you know, very keen for them to push through. We've had some incredible women on the board. I look back, some of the founding members were awesome, and we've had some seriously good ones. But they're always in a minority numerically, which, you know, as an industry, we're not good at it. Incident response is probably even worse. But we have had some brilliant women on our board, and they've been very, very, very good. I can think of half a dozen.
There's a new movement, Women in Cyber, that there's a lot going on with, and I think it's called Women in Cybersecurity. There's conferences. They have one in Denver. It's like 1,200 people registered. 1,200.
I mean, certainly the UK government's National Cyber Gang are, you know, busy pushing the Women in Cyber thing. They do lots of work specifically for them. And lots of governments are doing it. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I'll have to make some connections for you with people that might be able to support with that. So
that'd be fantastic.
We'll do that. As far as I'm looking at my notes, what we've taken. Global coordination, global language, automation, policy and governance, You said, I think you said policy and governance has become your focus lately. That's out of those four pillars, is that the most pressing one, I guess, nowadays?
I think they're all very important. The reason it's become the policy one has, and that new, it's probably the last few years that one's risen, purely because we've realized that we weren't in that debate. So there are various cyber norms exercises going on, there's the Paris Accords and so on. And at one point there was an agreement that nations shouldn't attack other nations' cyber defense, you know, cert type functionality. And we weren't really aware of that at the time, which is sort of, you know, shame on us for not being in that space. That's something we've changed, or we've pushed to change quite heavily. So I was at the World Economic Forum Center of Cybersecurity annual event a couple of months ago. We've done OECD events, the IGF in Berlin, and the UK, the United Nations event just a few weeks ago, where they brought in NGOs to talk about problems and help them. So we're really pushing, as are many other organizations. It is not just us, but I think there's a recognition that, you know, civil society needs to be getting into these debates to make sure that they're being dealt with, and that policymakers aren't just thinking about, you know, nation state problems and so on, that there's a civil society edge to all of this. It's really important to us. But be it specifically, if you could nuance the way you write rules and regulations so that you don't affect us, that would be brilliant.
Interesting. So it's actually something, that's why I'm asking so many questions, because interest of mine, we're setting up a non-governance or NGO for a blockchain that is cross-jurisdictional. And it's heavy on my mind as far as, you know, how's that organized? How did you guys do it? What problems you run into? So I'm noting all these away for as we get through this process and things we'll have to address. Right now, it hasn't gone international, but, you know, the capabilities and plan definitely is. So what do you worry about? What keeps you up at night? What do you see as industry problems? So
what worries me most, and it's harked back to the governance piece, is the sort of the fragmentation of the internet now. I can remember when I first hit the internet, mid-90s, and it was, you know, there was this vision of information is free and we can all learn from each other and the playing field will be leveled and, you know, nation states won't be able to bamboozle their people and all such that. And that seems to have disappeared a bit as nation states realize, and there's a degree of, I understand this, the internet is too important these days for it to be just left in the corner. It's, you know, countries are dependent upon it for infrastructure, for you know, government organizations and tax and all the things that governments do, but also in terms of industry and so on. So it's a really powerful tool. But, you know, you have some governments that will take a view that they, you know, they might want to fragment the internet or they might want to control their piece. And that really frustrates me. As we try and build this trust network globally with all the people we can, you know, to not be able to talk to a country because of a you know, whatever reason is very annoying to me. So that one frustrates me, worried. The other thing that keeps me awake at night is probably just the sheer complexity of the problem we're trying to solve, the fact that we're not very good at doing it manually because it's too many problems. I hark back to when I ran the UK cert for 3 years, and our challenge was that 90% of the problems we were faced with were not particularly complex problems. They were, you know, things were badly configured, badly set up, not patched, the usual litany of cyber hygiene, yet we don't seem to be getting any better at that. Yet we're now going to build smart cities where everything's joined together and you know, the whole world will be talking to each other and, you know, real-time, you know, heating and cars and all sorts of things. Yet we've sort of demonstrably rubbish at doing it for the infrastructure we've got in place now, let alone the bazillion things we're going to do. So incident response is going to become more complicated. You know, you can't reboot a city. You can't reboot, you know, the entire traffic light system. You know, everybody stop for 10 minutes while I reboot the traffic light. That's not apply. So all those things, it's going to become very, very challenging. And I worry that people aren't thinking that through, to my mind, as well as they should. They're not planning for it. They're not exercising for it. So it's very much a, when it goes wrong, there's knee-jerk reactions, there's bad judgment, and things go very badly wrong.
Yeah. So in kind of wrapping up here, what do you need from our listener base? How would people get a hold of you? Who should get a hold of you? How should people engage with you? Give us anything you want to put out.
So, Ed, forum first is a forum, so we're very much interested in talking, you know, bringing people together. We have a website, www.first.org, as you probably guessed. There's numerous ways of contacting us on there. That has a very good overview of what we do, how we do it, where we do it. Come to an event of ours, talk to us, come and learn what we do. But to be fair, even if you're not doing that, exercise, think about how you would react when your company, organization, whatever, gets hacked or potentially has an incident. How would you respond to that? Think about that, plan for it, exercise for it, document it, get better at that. Build relationships with your local teams, other people in your industry verticals, your national CCERT, if you've got one, when most countries do now. And if you can get to join FIRST, that would be absolutely brilliant. We'd love to have you on board.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining today, Chris. It's definitely been a pleasure. And let you have a good evening over there in the UK. But thanks.
Thank you. Have a good day yourself. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.